Is the divine grace of Ayasam Prabhupada Gosami Mahashiva? Is Tom Namur Charlotte Shilupa? And the Oti Vaishnava Nita and Acharya Stakuja? Friends say, oh, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, all Vishnu Vishwaka, Shiva, oh, Bhakta.
Himself and takes care of himself, take to devotional service to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is present everywhere as the super soul of all living entities. So, purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Haribo. The word atmaupamyena refers to thinking others to be like oneself. One can very intelligently conclude that without devotional service, without becoming Krishna conscious, one cannot be happy. Therefore, the duty of all devotees is to preach Krishna consciousness everywhere, all over the world, because all living entities without Krishna consciousness are suffering the pangs of material existence. To preach Krishna consciousness is the best welfare activity. Indeed, it is described by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as para upakara, work for the true benefit of others. The activities of para upakara have been especially entrusted to those who have taken birth in India as human beings. Varta bhumite hoila manusha janma jar. Janma saritaka hakari khara para upakar. Chaitanya Charitamrita Adilila, 9th chapter, text 41. The entire world is suffering for want of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised all human beings born in India to make their lives perfect by Krishna consciousness and then preach the gospel of Krishna consciousness all over the world so that others may become happy by executing the principles of Krishna consciousness. Tato harau bhagavati hi bhaktim kurta dhanavaha atmaupamyena sarvatra sarva bhutat manishvare. So omagana tmidanda sha gudanjana shlakaya chakshur and meditam yeda tasmai shi kutube namaha. So in this particular verse, Prahlad Maharaj is preaching to his classmates. Of course, he had to wait until his teacher, Sandadamarka, left the room, because he was real tricky. So he's preaching to his classmates, who were all the sons of demons, and he was teaching them basically how to become happy and how to make others happy and how to have compassion for all living entities. So, of course, the study of compassion is very interesting. And actually, compassion means with feeling, like passion means feeling. Of course, it doesn't always mean passion in terms of the mode of passion, but in this particular case, it means feeling. So compassion means with feeling for others. And in this regard, there's different words used. And two words we'd like to concentrate on today are sympathy and empathy. Because if we understand the meaning of these words, we can actually distinguish between true compassion and sentimental compassion. Of course, sentimental compassion also means that one does what they think is best for the person without considering the Vedic injunctions, without considering the instructions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is sometimes and usually very harmful for the living entity when we have this sentimental compassion. And Prabhupada gives the example, of course, that there was once upon a time there was a young child with some sort of like liver disease. And their brother, this girl's brother, actually became very sentimentally compassionate, sentimentally sympathetic with the person, and the brother gave the person some fried food or sweets, which is very bad for the liver. So, in other words, without proper understanding, acts of compassion can actually be violent, can hurt the living entity, both materially and spiritually. So compassion has to be done and based on shastras. That's the first point. But getting back to the other point which I wanted to make was the difference between the sympathy and empathy. With sympathy, if we're sympathetic, this is going by the strict definition in the dictionary, if we're sympathetic with someone, we're actually feeling more of our own emotions in regard to how that person or what that person is doing affects us. In other words, I feel real bad for you. You know, of course, that doesn't do very much for you, too. Like, if you're the person who's in pain, let's say you just went to the dentist or you had to go to the dentist and you were in a lot of pain and your godbrother or godsister walks up to you and says, I feel real bad for you. Doesn't really do anything, does it? You know, just get out of here, you know. So that's a sympathy where one is actually just more in tune with their own feelings. That's not Krishna conscious compassion. That's material. There's like, before I joined the movement, my mother used to do all these different welfare activities, helping people. And I said, why do you do these things? She said, because it makes me feel good. So that's sympathy. You know, you're doing something because it makes you feel good, or you feel guilty. That's another aspect of sympathy. Just like I was talking to one of my disciples who lives at Govardhan, and it's an interesting story. And he was telling me that there's some beggars, many beggars, of course, out there. And one beggar he was observing was shivering in the cold, because it's the month of January, shivering in the cold. And he felt so bad for the person, and he watched the person for a while, felt so bad. And he watched the person, and he saw that people were donating different things, like shawls and everything like that, to the person. The person was putting them away and then going out and shivering again. So, and this way he was calculating, this person probably makes 20,000 rupees a month. It's more than the average salary, probably more than the university graduate makes in India, right? 20,000 rupees a month is quite a bit of money. Anyway, so in other words, people were giving things because they felt bad for the person. They felt actually bad for themselves, guilty, like that. At the same time, we don't want to avoid helping people who are in distress. Like Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur criticized his disciples who would not give charity to the beggars in Vrindavan. He said, if you don't give the money, you're thinking yourself much better, you're thinking yourself to be a devotee, it'll make you hard-hearted. Because their refusal to give was based upon their pride, their false pride, you know, I'm a great devotee, etc. So, anyway, so sympathy is something like that. You're more concerned with your own feelings, and you feel real guilty about it. And then, but empathy is something different. That is Krishna conscious, where one is really taking the other person's feelings as most important. Of course, the technical Sanskrit word for that is para dukkha dukhi. That is where I consider the other person's feelings to be as important or more important than my own feelings. So how do you get to that point of para dukkha dukhi instead of just being, let's say, sentimentally sympathetic? Oh, I feel so bad for you, poor little boy. And as I mentioned before, that doesn't do anything for anyone if you tell them you feel so bad for them. It does. It actually helps a person much more if you're empathic with them. Let's go back to the example of toothache again. Let's say you have a toothache and it's really hurting you, and the person says, in a reflective fashion, in a compassionate reflective fashion, that they must be in a lot of pain because of that toothache. I know it's very stressful for you. Anyway, so that's more empathy. So how do you get to the point of being empathic rather than simply sympathetic? That requires deep Krishna consciousness, which we're going to describe the process, a little bit of the process of becoming empathic in a second. First of all, there's the yastu sarvani bhutani atmane vanapashati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tato vigupshate principle, which is from the Upanishad, where one sees everyone as part and parcel of Krishna. This is Krishna's statement in the Upanishad, that one who sees everyone in relationship to me doesn't hate anyone or hate anything. So he sees that everyone is Krishna's part and parcel. Mami Vamsa Jiva Loge, Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. So many verses like this, isn't it? That you'll find in the Vedic literature, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, etc. So if one sees everyone in relationship with Krishna, then one understands the relationship they have with you, which is family relationship. Just like a mother is naturally very empathic with the child. She feels the child's distresses to be her own, are actually even more intense than her own distresses. And of course, Prabhupada did say that the love a mother has for the child is perhaps the closest thing to pure love that we can find in this world, isn't it? Prabhupada did say that. So we can learn a little bit from observing how a mother loves a child. Because the mother loves the child, because there's sambandha, the relationship there. So we don't love people because we don't experience the sambandha or relationship, or we hate people because we don't experience the sambandha or relationship. So how to develop that sambandha, the relationship, is to develop our relationship with Krishna. And then everyone becomes related to us. So that's the first step. Then, Lord Kapiladev gives up us further steps on how to become compassionate or empathic with others. And the first step he gives us is perhaps the most difficult step to take. His famous verse, Tatikshava Kurunika Surida Sarvadehinam Jata Satrava Shanta Sadhava Sadhabhushana. First step, he says, you have to become what? Does anyone know what that word Tatikshava means? No one knows. Tolerant. And actually, that's Krishna's first lesson in the Bhagavad Gita, isn't it? Matras Parshas, see? Dukantaya, Sitoshna Sukha Dukada, Agama Paino Nidash, Tamsa Tiksha Shah Bharata. One must learn to tolerate what? Heat and cold, pleasure and pain, happiness and distress, all these things. So before you can even think of compassion, empathy, caring for others, you have to become tolerant. Because if you're not tolerant, what's going to happen? You're going to hate some people, and you're going to love other people. This is politics. The same politics that Prahlad Maharaj's wonderful teachers, Sandana Marka, were attempting to teach him. Isn't it? Friend and enemies. Everybody's heard of this? That was also mentioned in this part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Prahlad Maharaj's teachers were attempting to teach him politics. Just like you see right now, there's a political race going on between different candidates for president of the United States. And naturally, they're calling each other names and finding fault with each other. Isn't it? It's very interesting. Of course, I won't tell you who I'm going to vote for, but anyway. Maybe I should. I like Obama best. Anyway, I'm not telling you all who to vote for. But anyway, so so politics means friends and enemies. And this was the teaching of Sundar Marka, and they were actually teaching how to deal with friends and enemies, you know. And Prahlad Maharaj rejected it. What did they teach? You know, if you have an enemy, the first thing you do is, you know, sweet words, isn't it? Oh, my dear enemy, you're so nice. You know, sweet words. And what's the next thing? No one knows the next thing. Yes. Yeah, you give a bribe. We don't want to say gifts, it's a bribe. My dear enemy, you know, here, take 50,000 rupees and go away. Just like one time I was going into India, and I had with me a devotee from South America, and that time they were checking that someone's injections, vaccinations, and the man said, no, you can't come into India. You have to go 14 days into quarantine because you haven't had your proper injection. Not to me, but to the other gentleman I was with. And he said, and you have to go to the hospital each day, and the hospital is going to cost you 100 rupees. So I said to the man, what if I pay the 100 rupees times 14 days right now to you? Then he doesn't have to go to the hospital, right? And the man said, yes, that's good. Quick quarantine. It worked like a charm, you know. The guy was out of quarantine in 5 seconds, you know. So that's called a bribe, you know, money. Sweet words, bribe. Then another thing is high position. Oh, would you like to become vice president? Or something like that. I remember also another story from South America. I was years in South America preaching in the early days of the movement. But everybody liked to have position there, you know, and they were all doing politics. So you had to give people, oh, you're in charge. You're in charge of making sure the bathroom is clean. You're the president of the bathroom. So everyone had to have a position, isn't it? Anyone who's worked in South America probably knows what I'm talking about. You're in charge of this, you're in charge of that. Anyway, so sweet words, position, bribery. And then another one is beta. Beta means divide and conquer. You go, let's say you have two enemies and you can get them fighting with each other. It's really a cool way to get rid of them. You just say to one enemy, you heard what that enemy said about you? You know, not, you don't say enemy. You heard what that other person said about you? And then you go to the other one, did you hear what he said about you? He doesn't like you very much. He's criticizing you all the time. And then you go back, he's criticizing you all the time. And then what happens? They end up killing each other, fighting with each other. And actually, Lord Brahma used this technique. There were two demons, Sunda and Upasunda. I'm not going to tell the whole story. And no one could get rid of them. They had the benediction from Lord Brahma that the only way they would die is if they killed each other. And they were two friends. They were two brothers. They loved each other. So what Lord Brahma did is he created this most beautiful girl in the creation named Tilottama. And he sent her to the boys while they were drunk, and then they started fighting each other and killed each other off. So that's divide and conquer. And then after divide and conquer, that's beta. Beta means make a difference. Like we have our Chincha Beta Beta Tabo philosophy. And then after that, after divide and conquer, then there's a threat. And then finally, argumentum ad vaculum, you have the stick. So anyway, these are the different methods of dealing with enemies, friends, and enemies. Prahlad Maharaj rejected this as demoniac. Unfortunately, we haven't all rejected this particular thing now. We think that certain people satisfy my senses are my friends, certain people don't satisfy my senses are my enemies. We haven't learned to tolerate, in other words. So we think that certain people are objects of my compassion, my empathy, my sympathy, whatever it is, and certain people they're not, because they don't please my senses. So this is not Krishna conscious empathy, sympathy, or compassion, whatever you may call it. It's just not. It's just not. It's based on sense gratification, you know, pleasing yourself again, just another version of pleasing yourself. So how does one develop tolerance? And one story that I use to illustrate how one can develop tolerance is the story of Dharma the bull, who is being... Someone's mobile phone is going off and we're becoming intolerant. So... Anyway. Some nice music in class. So, they're like Dharma the bull was being attacked by... Anyone who was attacking him?
Kali.
Kali. And he was beating him, and he was standing on one leg and urinating. And then along came Maharaj Parikshit, and Maharaj Parikshit said, who did this to you? Who is responsible? And what did Dharma the bull say? Does anyone know? Did he say, he did it! Get him! Kill him! Wipe him out, Parikshit Maharaj! Jai! Hoodie bull! Let me see him suffer. Did he say that?
No.
No, what did he say? He said, it's very difficult to ascertain. In other words, he saw the Lord behind these different circumstances. Of course, that's also brought out in a nice verse spoken by Lord Brahma, Tatenam Kampam, Sushumikshamana, Bunjanabhatmakritam, Vipakam, Ridbag, Babur, Vidadam, Namaste, Jiveta, Yo, Mukti, Pade, Siddhayabhak. It's a famous verse that teaches us how to become tolerant, isn't it? That one should tolerate everything that happens to one. And of course, sometimes it's easier to tolerate bad things than good things. Good things bewilder us sometimes more than bad things. But you see them as resultant reactions of your past activities. And you tolerate them seeing it is Krishna. It is not karma. It's a token reaction directly administered by Krishna if you're a devotee. If you're not a devotee, then it's a reaction directly administered by Yamaraj. You got your choice. So it's Krishna, and Krishna's doing it for a specific purpose to teach you a specific thing. Right? In the path of spiritual advancement. It's Krishna. One sees Krishna in everything, Krishna everywhere. Krishna says this in the Gita. One who sees me in everything and everywhere is never lost to me, nor am I ever lost to him. So if one sees like that, then one understands it's for my own good this thing is happening, and Krishna's arrangement is there. And all of us, I think, in the progress or our spiritual lives or our experiences in Krishna consciousness have had things happen to us and we can't figure out why Krishna is doing it. Anyone ever have that experience? Why is Krishna doing it? And then 30 years later, he said, that's why he did it. Was it called Monday morning quarterbacking or something like that? Or something like that, you know. There's other words for it. You know, it was good he did that 30 years ago. He made me nice and miserable, but it helped me become detached and chant better and come to where the platform that I'm at right now, you know, helped me, you know, become a sannyasi or whatever. So, but it's Krishna. It's not Dharma the Bull says anyone who blames the immediate perpetrator or who appears to be the cause because just as culpable as the person who's causing the difficulty. In other words, if Dharma the Bull had said to Pariksit Maharaj, Kali is the fault. Kali is at fault. He's actually causing my pain. He would have been just as culpable as Kali. That's an interesting statement that's there in the Srimad Bhagavatam. Why is that? Because one is taking an atheistic viewpoint. As we know, and Prabhupada would quote this, and many people, even outside of Krishna consciousness, would quote this particular statement, not a blade of grass moves without the will of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So it's Krishna. It's Krishna doing that. So this can teach us, if we think like that, this can help us develop tolerance, which is the first prerequisite for compassion. Of course, even before that is to see Krishna, is to understand everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. But Titikshava comes before Karunika. And it's interesting, this Karunika that a devotee has, this compassion, this mercy that a devotee has, is an ocean of mercy. An ocean means unlimited. Just like we are chanting every morning. What is it? Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha. It's interesting, sometimes devotees translate that as full of compassion. But the real translation, I mean the better translation, would be unlimited compassion. Because the notion is unlimited, isn't it? Think about it. Kripa Sindhu. It's not simply full. Full of compassion for the fallen conditioned souls. It's unlimited compassion for the fallen conditioned souls. So Titikshava, and then after that, Lord Kapiladev says, Karunika, then one can be merciful. Titikshava, Karunika, Suridam, Sarvadehinam. Now one is merciful to all living entities without discrimination, Ajata Shatrava, and therefore he doesn't consider anyone to be his enemy, or a strict translation is his enemy is never born. Jatav Shantava, Shanta, he's peaceful. Sadhava Sadhavushana, these are the qualities. This is the quality of a great devotee. And we see these qualities illustrated, demonstrated, manifested in all the great devotees. Like we see with his divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, the founder and acharya of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, our spiritual master, one of the main reasons he was able to be so successful is that he was so tolerant. I mean, who can imagine the tolerance he had coming from Vrindavan, being absorbed in Krishna's pastimes, and having to live? I mean, even in the boat coming over, Prabhupada having the heart attacks. And continuing with his mission. And having to live with the likes of us. You know, Prabhupada was living with people who had dog food in their refrigerator. Isn't it? I mean, you may think, oh, but, well, the dog food's all right, you know. We're looking at everything from our perspective, you know, the way we used to be, or the way we may want to be, or hopefully don't want to be. And we think, oh, yeah, what's the big deal? But, you know, here's someone in the spiritual world, from the spiritual world, coming down. And, of course, we don't know, what the consciousness is like, someone in the spiritual world. But it's unimaginable. You know, here it's like walking into the depths of depravity. Isn't it? What we considered normal was at that depths of depravity. You know, having drunk people walk in, and Prabhupada was so compassionate that he accepted toilet paper from a drunk person as he was giving a lecture. He didn't think, oh, this stupid drunk. Get him the hell out of here. But isn't it like we even we would think, you know, just think of how what a lack of compassion we have. Or I'm talking about myself. I don't want to criticize anyone else. That we get angry at a moment's notice. Isn't it? We get angry. Why do we get angry? Krishna describes why. That's very easy. Jayato Vishakapum Sam Sangha Stasha Pajayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kamakura Pajayate. Because we're some of our desires become frustrated, basically. That's why. It has nothing to do with compassion. And sometimes we think that our anger is compassion. For pure devotees, anger can be compassion because it's not because of frustration out of lust. But with us, you know, we see, oh, this stupid conditioned soul. Or when I was a new brahmachari, you know, we'd go wake up the other brahmacharis in the ashram. You rascal, idiot, fallen demon, you're in Maya. And out of anger, I would take him and drag him into the shower in his sleeping bag and turn on the shower. I'm sure we all did stuff like that in the beginning days. So, you know, Prabhupada exhibited the topmost aspect, the topmost manifestation of compassion and tolerance. And his godbrothers criticized him, not understanding that. His godbrother said, oh, he was successful because he liked to hang out with us Westerners, or he liked nonsense. Prabhupada was successful because he had Krishna Shakti, obviously, pure devotee, Nitya Siddha devotee, but he was tolerant. And the reason many of Prabhupada's godbrothers were not successful is they were just not tolerant. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, you know, illustrated this point in tolerance. He actually said to make devotees we have to shed, what is it, gallons of blood or something like that, or tons of blood. And he even said, you know, when people are coming, of course, this was just showing his tolerance, not that we should follow this exactly, but he said, if they want meat, feed them meat, but give them Krishna consciousness. Not that we should do that. But the mood was, whatever is necessary, you bring them to Krishna consciousness. And you tolerate. You know, you tolerate. And for Prabhupada, it was like tolerating a bunch of monkeys at the zoo. And that's why he was successful. And of course, there's so many other examples of tolerance. I don't think we have time to talk about it, but Prahlad Maharaj is the perfect example of tolerance. And we're reading about him this morning. Prahlad Maharaj never said to Lord Nrsimhadev or prayed to the Lord while he was being tortured, smash my father, teach him a lesson. He wasn't like the modern day people. You know, like, I know, yeah, one story of intolerance that we tell is that sometimes, you know, they have this capital punishment in America. Someone has committed a crime, killed someone, and they're going to be killed in the prison by lethal, by injection or, you know, electric chair or something like that. And outside the prison, they have this thing called tailgating. I think you Americans know what it is. Like young people, they get out there, they're tailgates mean they're in their pickup truck sitting drinking, waiting for the word that the person in the prison has been killed. And as soon as he's killed, they all jump up and start in ecstasy. I'm too conditioned. So they jump up and say, wow, this is great, he's killed. But Prahlad Maharaj was not like that. Prahlad Maharaj, the whole time his father was attempting to torture him, was simply chanting Hare Krishna and felt no animosity towards his father. Look at that tolerance. And then, after his father had been killed, he didn't say to Lord Nrsimhadev, you did a good job, send the guy to hell. Suffer. You know, just like sometimes you find in these Christian tracts, you see a picture of someone who is just not surrendered to Jesus Christ, and he's boiling there in hell, you know, and the devils are up, you know, pushing him with the pitchforks and everything like that. And he says, God, forgive me. And God says, you know, you didn't make it. The one life you had, you know, suffer. Haha. So Prahlad Maharaj, he didn't say, you know, oh boy, I'm glad my father was killed. You know, let him suffer. Whew, what a relief. The creep's gone. He said, save him. Save him. And Prahlad Maharaj, after this whole ordeal, said, I'm full of compassion. I'm full of compassion of the fallen conditioned soul. And Prahlad Maharaj didn't even ask anything for himself. I mean, the only thing he basically asked for himself was, he said, the only thing I'm afraid of is that you're illusory energy. So this is Vaishnava. Anyway, we could go on telling stories about compassion, Lord Chaitanya Prahlad Maharaj, Haridas Thakur and the prostitute. But the point is that this exhibition of compassion, or the development of compassion, is very important, essential for our own Krishna consciousness. You cannot separate Krishna consciousness from compassion for others, especially in this day and age where Krishna Nam Sankirtan, the preaching of Krishna consciousness, is the methodology for becoming Krishna conscious. So somehow or other, we have to take this upon ourselves to become tolerant, to become compassionate, become empathic with others, to control our anger. Oh, that's another subject matter. I just want to finish with that. How do you control your anger? Does anyone know? Any ideas? Yeah. That's right. Practice forgiveness. Practice forgiveness. And how do you practice forgiveness with someone who's done something apparently to you? First of all, you see Krishna behind it. Second of all, you see that that person is suffering. Because if someone out of anger does something to you, or for some other motive does something to you, they're the ones who are suffering. And if you continue to be angry with him, what do they say? When you bite your own lip, are you hurting him? You're hurting yourself. So in other words, anger just hurts you. It doesn't hurt the other person. So empathy. You see the other person is suffering. You feel compassionate for the other person's suffering. You even put yourself, maybe not so much in the other person's shoes, but understand where they're coming from. And forgiveness. Forgiveness is a wonderful quality. Prabhupada said forgiveness is the quality of a Vaishnava and a Brahmana. There's many, many quotes from Prabhupada about forgiveness, how forgiveness is essential in Krishna consciousness. So anyway, if we develop this quality, then it'll be very easy to be Krishna conscious. It won't be a very difficult thing. Whereas, if we see friends and enemies, as Prahlad Maharaj's teachers wanted him to see, then our Krishna consciousness will be very far away from us. So any questions, comments, arguments, problems, issues, difficulty with anything I said? Maharaj?
Comment or question?
Okay.
Next section of the Bhagavatam with Maharaj Pariksit asking Dharma who did it. I've been party to discussions where the conversation, if you look at it from both sides,
yeah,
where Dharma's answer is philosophical.
Mm-hmm.
In regular conversation, we may not forget the philosophy, but give the direct answer. And if we give a direct answer while remembering that Krishna is behind it, it doesn't make us equally culpable as the person as the perpetrator. Like, let's say, you know, a child abuse situation.
Yeah.
And someone says, did, you know, what happened? Who can say?
Yeah, that's actually a very good point. That we actually have to function on two levels simultaneously. And I'll give you another example of that functioning on two levels simultaneously. Like Prabhupada, one time a devotee wrote a letter to Prabhupada and he called himself a devotee. And Prabhupada said a devotee never calls himself a devotee. So let's say you're out in the street preaching, and someone says, "Are you a devotee?"
You say,
"No, I'm not a devotee. I'm a fallen rascal." Then what? How can you preach to the person or help the person? So there's a common way of understanding the word devotee, and then there's an internal way. So that's a very good point. That obviously, you know, if we see someone who's done something to someone, or even done something to us, we can understand, yes, this person has done something, but internally we should not be harboring that grudge towards the person. That's the point. I mean, we can say, for practical purposes, this person ran me over with his car. And I'm going to go to court and get some money for the Christian Consciousness Movement. Get my medical bills paid. You know, you can't go to court and say, you know, it's Krishna ran me over with the car. Who can say? You imagine going to the judge, you know. My dear judge, who can say who ran me over with the car? Some say it's this, some say it's that. You know, then your lawyer will fire you. So that's a good point, Maharaj. Thank you. Yeah.
Just to comment, you said I was given a lecture on that same point by Prabhupada today, and Prabhupada actually comments in the Bible, you know, that that's actually real knowledge. Mm. He said that this is the path. The one is practicing tolerance and human, that this is actually the real path of devotional service. And what's contrary to that is that speculative ignorance of God. And this is actually the real path of devotional service.
That's right.
And he quoted Prahlad Maharaj just like you know, use Prahlad Maharaj.
That's a great quote. Yeah, this is the actual path of devotional service, tolerance. Tatikshiva Karunika. That comes first, as we mentioned before. That's Bhagavad Gita. First thing Krishna tells Arjuna is, you know, Tam Satikshisha Bharata. Yeah.
Yes, Marek, are there some things that we should not tolerate?
Yeah, like the blasphemy of a devotee. Yeah, that's spiritual, but those things, when we don't tolerate, they're not done out of frustrated lust. You know, most of the things, I mean, everything materially that makes us angry is coming from this Jayate Vishak Pumsam Sangasteshapa Jayate Sangatsam Jayate Kamaka. We're contemplating sense objects, we want some enjoyment, and something gets frustrated, and therefore we get angry. Kamakrota Vijayate. But that's done out of love. Oh, yeah, that's a very good point. You know, one time, or many times, the impersonalists, they criticize us for being so heavy with them, isn't it? They say, you know, why are you so... You know, even they criticize Prabhupada, you know, getting angry. And Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, what to speak of Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, who was known as Nrsingha Guru, because sometimes he would pick people up by the, you know, whatever, the collar, and say, why are you preaching this nonsense? And sometimes he would say, why are you wearing a shirt? Why don't you just wear, a piece of cotton? A ball of cotton. So, you know, so why should we get angry with impersonalism or, you know, people blaspheme devotees? Because there's love there. That's why. And that's what I explained. You know, I had even some of my disciples say, that, you know, why are you so angry with these impersonalists that are so wonderful? And, the impersonalists, what are they saying? You know, God has no senses, he has no arms, no legs. He's whatever, you know, whatever they say about him. You know, I'm God, you're God, we're all God. Why do we get angry? Because we love Krishna. Like if you're a mother, and someone comes up and says to you about your child, what an ugly child you have! Woo! Get ready to have your eyes scratched out at that point. Isn't it? That's it, you know, that's fighting words. And at the same time, if you want to win the mother over, you say, what a gorgeous child they have, even if the child is ugly as sin. That's what politicians do, they kiss babies. So, the point is, if there's love, then that's all right. The anger can come from love, real love. You know, so if you love Krishna, someone says something nasty, like Krishna comes from the Brahman, ooh, yuck. It makes you angry. Of course, it has to be expressed appropriately. You know, and philosophically, you don't want to be just tackling everybody at the university who gives them impersonal philosophy. But that's love. That's not frustration, that's love. Like a mother with a child, that's love. And that's how I explain it. You know, the devotees would say, you know, why are you getting so angry, Maharaj? I said, I'm sorry, I apologize. I mean, I love Krishna, I can't help it. It's an emotional thing. Don't blame me for my emotions. Everybody understands emotions. So any other questions or comments or arguments? No arguments. Anyway, compassion, love for all living entities, this is the hallmark of Krishna consciousness.
Yeah. Somewhat challenged that if you say you're compassionate,
yeah,
you're giving a high value to compassion, and yet there's nothing in your books about like racial inequality or inequality of incomes, or you don't see them doing humanitarian welfare works in third world countries.
Well, there's a lot about racial equality. I mean, basically, I mean, we're all equal. I mean, not only racial equality, not only humanism, but, you know, doing away with speciesism, we're actually equal, all living entities. Yastu sarvani bhutani atma naivana pashyati. So, I mean, we have real equality, not just speciesism. So as far as doing welfare work, Prabhupada said this is the best welfare work because we understand where or why people are in distress. It's because of karma, the karmic reactions. We're trying to mitigate that by giving them Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, what you're doing, trying to help people, you're just like, it's hopeless because they have to suffer their karma anyway. I mean, it's just hopeless. And you see, I mean, all these different attempts, United Nations and different material attempts that have been done by people throughout the ages, it's just like trying to empty the ocean using a little cup of water. It just doesn't work. I mean, we're actually interested in mitigating the sufferings of humankind. But we have to see where the sufferings are coming from first. I mean, just like we can see how Krishna consciousness gives us perfect solution for all the problems. Just like you have this global warming thing that everybody's very worried about, right? Well, it turns out that, you know, 90% of the global warming gases come from the animal husbandry. You understand? I mean, people don't tell you that, you know, the university. Animal husbandry means, you know, taking care of animals and all the things that go along with the cutting down the rainforest and everything like that. So Krishna consciousness, and Krishna consciousness, one becomes compassionate to all living entities. Global warming would more or less come to a halt if people were Krishna conscious. You know, so we can solve all these problems just with Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? Whether it's global warming, whether it's violence in different countries between different political factions, different racial factions, different religions, etc., 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 all can be solved. Otherwise, there is no solution. Any other questions or comments? I think it's time for prasadam. That's real compassion. And then some of us have a meeting today. I don't know if that's compassion, but anyway, we have some meetings.
That's the tolerance part.
I'm sorry. Today I will learn some more lessons in tolerance. So all glories to His Divine Grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.